Line, Willie, D. Mace, 1025-1063, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios. And, of course, you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Rand Carthon's introductory press conference in 1 hour. We will play that live here on 1025-1063, The Game. Willie Donick. Derek Mason, how we doing?
Hey, it's Hello. Friday. It is Friday, Happy so I'm Friday. Doing wonderful. Sun's out. Let's get to it.
Nick Keyser behind the glass. How we doing, Nick?
I'm ready to hear from our new GM.
Let's do it. I'm excited about it. But I want to start here because the Predators got that butt whooped last night in St. Louis, 5-2. And this Blues team is not very good. This is an underwhelming St. Louis Blues team. I view the Blues and the Predators in a very similar spot of two teams that expected more, that are trying to make a push for the playoffs. I'm depressed about this hockey team. I'll be completely honest with you guys. And I know they were on a two-game winning streak, and that game against the Blue Jackets, I mean, they beat one of the worst teams in the league, if not statistically the worst team in the league, at 2-1. And it took Kevin Lankin and heroics, basically, to win that game. And then you go on the road at St. Louis, and you get embarrassed by a team that has been underwhelming. The power play has been a problem. The offense has been a problem for St. Louis. And I thought the Predators just, hey, you know, it was a close game in the first period. I'll give them that. After that, I think the Predators just got kind of embarrassed. And I don't know where this hockey club goes from here. I'm depressed about this team. It feels like every single week it's, you know, you take one step forward and then two steps back.
Yeah, Willie, what more can you say about this team? You know, the inconsistencies are there, sort of reminiscent of the Tennessee Titans toward the latter part of the year. It just seems like, you know, like Carolyn said, no matter what, it you see the improvement and you start to feel good about it, and all of a sudden, you know, it's like, I don't know if they take their foot off the pedal, they get complacent, or whatever the deal is. That's a team last night that was missing two of their players, probably more than that.
Yeah, but they were missing more than two.
Two main players.
They got six guys on IR.
And you know, go up to St. Louis and you put together that type of performance. They should be embarrassed. I mean, the whole organization should be embarrassed, honestly. You know, I'm not calling for anything and anybody. But they should be embarrassed by the way they got beat last night by a team that was basically, you know, in a sense, a shell of themselves because of the injuries. And you went out and played in a fashion that you played. You can't explain it.
Well, they're going to have to wear that one last night. I mean, that was a big game, and that was a poor performance. There's just no way around it. And our broadcast, I think, tried to point out during the game that in a game like that, and let's say this, St. Louis, despite the injuries, they're playing well. They've won six out of their last nine. They're not what they thought they were going to be at this point of the season, which was a contender, mm-hmm. right? They expected to contend. They have not played well for the course of the season. But lately, even with the guys out, and they're missing two main weapons up front, on offense, and they're missing a couple of key defensemen. They're finding ways to still be pretty good. And their best players that are still there, Robert Thomas, Jordan Kyrou, Braden Schenn, big game last night.
Kyrou was everywhere.
Those guys played great. Braden Schenn dominated the faceoff circle. Jordan Kyrou had 8 shots on goal, had double-digit shot attempts. He was everywhere. The Predators' top players were no-shows. I mean, there's just no way around it. So, look, I'm staying by what I was saying a lot yesterday, that, you know, this team was 5-8-1, I think, at one point. So if you look steadily, they've made progress. They're doing better overall. But too often, mm-hmm. too often in games like that, what happened last night has happened. The other team's big players make plays. Now, why are they great players? Why would you sign Jordan Kyrou to an 8-year, $8 million contract? Or Rob Thomas to an 8-year, $8 million contract? Because you expect big games like that. They're not going to have big games every game. right? There's going to be some games where Jordan Kyrou hadn't had a great year. I mean, he's had a good scoring year. He's got weaknesses in his game. But last night, he had a great game. But what return on investment are the Predators getting from right down the list? Matt Duchene, Ryan Johansson, Mikael Granlund, Philip Forsberg. They're just not dominating enough games. They're not dominating every game. But there's just too often where you need a big performance by your top players.
And you're not getting it.
Last night, the top six forwards, the top two lines for the Predators had five combined shots on goal. So that's Forsberg, Glass, Duchene on the top line. They combined for three shots. Two by Forsberg, one by Duchene, none for Glass. Second line, Niederreiter, Johansson, Granlund. They had a combined three shots. That's just not enough. You can't win games when your top two lines, and that's where the money is for the most part. You know, for the forward lines. You know, you can't just say, well, Tommy Novak's got to carry us to victory. Juuso Parsonen's got to carry us to victory. Those guys have done a really good job for the most part, and they've helped buoy the team to stay in the picture. And obviously the goaltending has risen and erased a lot of the mistakes. But over 82 games, at some point, you got to have the pull from your top guys. So to me, that's the crossroads. That was what stung last night. It was a big game. And they collapsed, right? It was midway through the game. It's still, they're right in there. It's 1-1 going through the midway portion of the game. But then St. Louis hit another gear. Their big players came to play. And Nashville just fell apart. So they've got to get right back at it tomorrow. They've got three huge games before an 11-day break where it's really going to be time to sort things out and see where you are. If they do well in these three games, then, okay, you recharge the batteries, see where you're at on the other side. But there really needs to be a response tomorrow, in my opinion, because that was a tough feeling. Everybody was not feeling good about how that went last night.
But the tough part about, you know, the next three games, and then you have the All-Star break, and then you can recharge. I think the fan base, and myself included, the narrative of, you know, that was a bad one, but you got to get yourself back in it. The Predators can get themselves back in it. I think that narrative is getting really tired because that's been the constant cycle all year long. You go on a losing streak. You win a couple. It makes you feel like, okay, like maybe this team is getting somewhere. And then you fall right back into the cycle of losing a few and then getting a little bit of confidence and getting knocked right back down to the point where I feel like a lot of fans are thinking, at this point, we don't even care about making the playoffs. At this point, the Predators have a 19% chance of making the playoffs per MoneyPuck.com. And I think at this point, a lot of fans are thinking, don't make the playoffs.
Would you not want to make the playoffs?
Because then that's going to have to force changes. Because last year, the narrative was, well, nobody expected us to get to the playoffs, but we got in the playoff anyways. And then when they got into the playoffs, I didn't feel like they had a chance to beat the Colorado Avalanche. And at that point, don't even make the playoffs and get a better draft pick and be forced to make changes. Adam Vingan was on Stillman & Company yesterday and reiterated the same idea.
It is in the best interest of this organization. They would never say it. Of course they wouldn't. It is in the best interest of this organization to miss the playoffs this season because they cannot spin that in any way, shape, or form. They cannot say, well, no one expected us to be here like they said last year because they didn't make it to the playoffs. And then they will be forced to finally confront some hard truths about where this team is going. So I think there are Predators fans who want this team, you know, who care about this team that want them to do poorly enough to miss the playoffs to see some real change. I really think that.
And I know that making the playoffs overall is a good thing. And there's the idea of once you get in the playoffs, anything can happen. And I understand that idea. But it's been the last couple of years. You get in the first round, you get bounced in the first round, you barely squeak into the playoffs, and you don't have a chance against a team that's overall just better than you, whether it's Colorado, whether it's Carolina in 2021. And I think a lot of fans are sick of being masked by, well, we made the playoffs, so we'll run it back and we'll continue doing what we did do because we made it the playoffs last year. And I think fans just want to not make the playoffs and have to be forced to make changes and not have anything to hide behind.
I think even if they make the playoffs, I think, you know, ultimately they're going to have to make changes. Now, where those changes at, I don't know. I'm not part of the organization in that fashion, but here's the thing, and this is no disrespect to anybody. If you haven't played at this level, it's easy for you to say don't make the playoffs. I'm not necessarily talking about you, Caroline. I'm just saying, like, fans, it's easy to say don't make the playoffs. But those guys work their asses off, and they may not be playing well. And some of those guys need to play well. They're paying you a lot of money. You need to play well. But, you know, the guys that are playing well, the guys that go in there that are not getting paid the big dollars, they should have a chance and the opportunity to make the playoffs. We can still make change and make the playoffs, because it's just been them the last couple of years just skating in into the playoffs and barely making it and then getting ousted in the first round. They can still make those changes while making the playoffs, if indeed they want to. If they don't make the playoffs, they still might not make no changes. But when you play this sport at this level, and you play that many games for so long, nobody's going in there saying, damn, I hope we don't make the playoffs. They want to make the playoffs. Do they want to see change too? Possibly, yes. Fans, I understand you want to see change. Hell, I want to see them too. But I don't want my team to not make the playoffs, because I know we can make changes as we make playoffs. Now, if you make the playoffs, your draft slot may not be where it would have been had you not made it, but you can still make front office changes if that's indeed what you're going to do, even if you make the playoffs. We've seen teams year in and year out, no matter what. We've seen here, you make the playoffs, they still fire your ass. So it doesn't matter. To me, those guys work entirely too hard at this level for fans just to say, please don't make the playoffs. I'm going to say this. If you believe they shouldn't make the playoffs, don't support them. That's all I got to say. If in your heart you are not a true diehard fan, because you want your team to do good no matter what. You want them to do good, but you want change too. I want them to do good and still make changes. You know, I don't want them to miss the playoffs. You know, playoffs is good for the city. It's good for the fans. I guarantee you, all those people that are screaming don't make the playoffs, if they make the playoffs, their butts will be in that building supporting that team. So I'm not down with the narrative, don't make the playoffs. Play as hard as you can. If it's not good enough, let's make changes. If you barely skate in and you feel you still need to make changes, make them. But at the end of this season, I am going to say this. If it ends up being like last season, there need to be some changes made.
I think that's very fair, Derek. And in regards to Adam, he and I are good friends, and we've had many discussions about this on the air and off the air. And he's been sticking to this for sure. And I do think that at the end of the season, when you evaluate it, the way I look at it is, look, they added Ryan McDonagh. Mm-hmm. They added Nino Niederreiter. Kevin Lankinen's been a great upgrade for them. This team was built to get to the playoffs and do something. So as long as they're in that mode, like you said, Derek, you know what it's like in the foxhole, right? Ryan McDonagh is not sitting there going, well, you know, maybe we shouldn't make the playoffs, so we'll get a better draft. Those guys, it's not how those guys think, right? They're not. There's still 37 games left. There's a lot that can happen here. I understand the frustration of the fans, because it is frustrating to be sort of treading water. They're behind where they have been the last couple years, which has been sort of in the playoffs. You know, are they good enough to win in the playoffs? Now they've taken they're in a dangerous spot right now where they're going to have to play very well to get to the playoffs. I still am not giving up hope. Last year, I throw out because they didn't have their best player in UC Saros, and they would not have played the Avalanche in the first round had they had UC Saros. They did not get hurt, but that's a woulda, coulda, shoulda. But I do think that in a perfect form, this team would have a puncher's chance to win a round or two in the playoffs. And even then, I think it's fair to say, okay, at the end of the year, still, are you where you want to be? Are there changes that need to be made? There probably will be. But look, that was a dud last night. That's the thing.
It was bad.
Yeah, and so
how do they get the guys that you name, whether it's, you know, Duchesne?
It's the number one question.
I want to get into that.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
And Willie, you mentioned something which I think kind of plays into some of the fans' frustration. I want to get into that coming up next as well. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 1025-1063, The Game.
I think that let's say they lose these next four games, or they go 0-3-1 or 0-2-2. If they don't win any of these games, I personally would strongly consider just bringing up Carl Taylor for the rest of the season. I would bring up Carl Taylor for the rest of the season. He knows a lot of these players. He coached well in the pinch last season. It was last season, if I recall correctly. I think if this team enters the All-Star break and its bye week on a 4-game losing streak, I would strongly consider just bringing up Carl Taylor for the rest of the year.
That is your way of saying you would fire the coach.
More or less.
There you go. That was Adam Vingan on Stillman & Company yesterday. And before the break, Willie, you mentioned the Predators bringing in Ryan McDonagh and Nino Niederreiter. And those were all moves that the Predators made to make a push this year. And when they made those moves, I thought, great, okay, this team is getting better. You add much-needed forward depth. You add a veteran defenseman on this team. But unfortunately, that hasn't really come to fruition. Ryan McDonagh has looked better. But in the beginning of the season, Ryan McDonagh started off slow. And Nino Niederreiter has been fine. But those two moves,
I think he's been good. I think he's been very good.
That's fair. Those two moves to me were moves by the Predators to say, okay, we're making a push. We're trying to get better. We are signing veteran players to make this team better, to make the playoffs, and to be able to compete in the playoffs. But where it stands right now, the Predators are in sixth place in the Central Division. Per MoneyPuck.com, they have a 19% chance of making the playoffs. So this push that they made, and it wasn't just what David Poile said in his end-of-the-year press conference of, we want to compete, we want to win a Stanley Cup. And it's actually making those moves to make the team better, and it hasn't made the team better. So where do you go from here? I don't think that this team is going to be able to make the playoff push that it intended to make unless there are changes that are made. And Derek, your point about, you know, fans not wanting to make the playoffs, it has nothing to do with the individual players and the work that they put in week after week. I know those players work their butts off, but I think it's more so the fans' reaction to how this franchise has treated making the playoffs. If I think John Hines maybe could have deserved to lose his job last year. I don't think he did much to keep his job last
I thought,
year to get extended last
I completely
last
disagree
year.
With that. I thought he did a tremendous job with what he had to work with last year based on the expectations. So I philosophically disagree. I know a lot of people are anti-John Hines. I really can't figure it out. I don't think it's him.
John Hines as a person.
No, I'm talking about as a coach. I'm talking about as a coach. I think he's a very good coach, and I think to deal with some of the issues that they've had, he's done a phenomenal job.
Why do you think he's a very good coach?
Well, you tell me. Your $8 million center got one shot last night. What do you do? I mean, that's happened way too often. We're talking about Matt Duchene. Mm-hmm. Ryan Johansson, $8 million guy. Mm-hmm. Not the player he was 4 or 5 years ago. How do you overcome that? Last year he got a lot out of both of those guys.
So did they get worse since last year?
They've been very inconsistent players, even going back to Peter Laviolette. And I think that's really where you start. When you have $16 million invested in those guys, and they are as enigmatic as they've been, it doesn't make it easy on the coach.
And
this
that's
is not
Peter
a loaded.
Peter Laviolette got fired is because they were inconsistent, is because the players that you pay a ton of money for are inconsistent.
So that's what I'm saying, is the coach is not the issue. To me, this is what
it was
I,
when Peter Laviolette was coaching.
Well, Peter Laviolette had been there for a lot longer, and I think that had sort of run its course. I do agree that, you know, at some point, this is the move that a lot of teams make eventually, is they just change the coach. But I think John Hines is to be commended to go through the rebuild. Now, Peter Laviolette, when he got fired, it was a roster that was built to win big at the time. It was a veteran roster. They were trading draft picks. They were going with veteran players, and they fell short. John Hines had to pick up the pieces and deal with the competitive transition, where they traded Ryan Ellis. They traded Victor Arvidsson. They moved on from Nick Bonino. They moved on from Craig Smith, from Austin Watson. A lot of the core players, Kyle Turris, that whole mess that he inherited. That was not on John Hines, right? That's a roster trying to transform and get younger. And John Hines, through that transition, still got them to the playoffs. That's good coaching to me. Now, this team is trying to build back to more of a veteran team, and they have underachieved. There's no question about it. But I just don't fall back on its coaching. You got to have accountability as a player. The coaches are the same. No, but you can ask more of the players.
How?
Get it done.
Seattle asked more of Eli Tolvanen.
Everything's going right for Seattle right now.
Yes,
and so that's right now. That's right here in this moment. They're playing great. They're a great story. The Predators for the first half of last season were a great story. Everything was going right. There's an ebb and flow of what's going on. And so I think they've got to come out of it for sure. But there has to be – the coach can't magically wave a wand and say everybody be at their best. They do the best they can. And I just feel like there's got to be more from the top players to be successful. I don't care if they change the coach, the same thing is going to happen. You can't move on from all the players. Like you said, you can't fire the players. So you've got to ask more of these guys.
Well, I mean, you're right, Willie. You're right, Caroline. They can't fire the players. You got to ask the players to start doing more. And I'm sort of in this space where there's going to come a point, if that point hasn't already came, where management say, listen, there's nothing we can do to the players. Unfortunately, that's the way collective bargaining is. You sign these long-term deals, and they may play great for a year, that long-term deal, and then now you're basically stuck with them for 5 or 6 years and hoping and praying that they play to a level that is consistent enough for you to win. And it seems like the players on this team, for whatever reason, some of them are not holding up their end of the bargain. So you go out and you ask them to play harder, or you try to switch lineups, and they still don't. Eventually, you know, what happens is you have to change the coach, whether you like the coach or not, because whatever message he's preaching is not getting through to the players. Because it would be easy to, you know, trade a Duchesne or one of these other guys, but who's going to take on the contracts, you know? So in order to have change moving forward, I can't do anything to the players. I may have to make a change with the head coach, because for whatever reason, the message that he's preaching is falling on deaf ears.
Whether it's the message, whether it's the system, whatever it is, it's just not working. And the players like Forsberg and Duchesne and Johansson, those players didn't just get bad overnight. Eli Tolvanen goes to Seattle and he's playing lights out.
Why are we talking about 10 games that he's played, okay? Now, if he
and
does
he
it for another
7 points in 10 games.
Great. Tommy Novak had 7 points in 10 games.
But
Eli when
Tolvanen
he came
wasn't
up.
Doing that here. That's the problem.
Okay, let's see how he's doing after 50 games, after 70 games, after 100 games.
And we can
okay, so you can
that,
jump
then.
On that all we want, but that to me is that's not why this team isn't getting it done. It starts at the top. The top players have to play better. They're capable of playing better, and it's not on the coach.
Why not?
Tell me why it's on the coach.
Because that's his job. It's the coach's job.
No, it's the player's job. They put the guys out there.
It's the coach's
they play
job
the
to
top
put them
minutes.
In the best situation
no,
that they can to
I
win.
I do not subscribe to that. Well, this is the same coach that
what
was
is
last
the coach's
year.
Job?
They got 43 goals out of these guys last year. The same coach.
And that was last year.
Do you think
year.
He's coaching different?
And
you
last
think
year, they got swept in the first round of the playoffs.
Do you think he's coaching different this year to those players as he did last year?
The results are different.
I'm asking you, do you think he's coaching different this year than he is last year?
The results are different.
I know the results are different. I'm asking, do you think the coach has changed his philosophy? He's not putting them in the same position to go out and succeed as he did last year.
I don't know what he's doing.
You don't know. What do you suspect? Do you think he changed?
I would suspect it would be different because the results are different.
Do you think he changed his coaching philosophy over the summer?
I don't know, Willie. All I'm saying is...
You do know. You do know. The answer is no. He's coaching the same thing. It's
then
the
maybe
same
that's
system.
The problem. Because it's
the problem
not
when Matt Duchesne had his best year last year, 43 goals. You think it was a bad problem to stay with the same system?
Well, what about Matt Duchesne this year?
I'm asking, what about Matt Duchesne? That's what I'm asking. And I'm not singling just him out. I'm talking about that's how this works. They didn't change anything. You got to have your top players produce. So why is it not? Why do people not come on? Why does John Hines take all the heat, and the top players who are making $8 million a year
not take any heat? Well, you know how it is, Willie.
It should be balanced. I'm not saying John Hines is completely excused from all this stuff, but it's collective. I just think he gets an unbalanced amount of the blame for what the issue is right now.
I mean, but that's the way it is. It you know, somebody has to be the scapegoat. And,
right, and that's unfair,
you know. But that's sports. I mean, we've seen it across the board. And I've always said, listen, sometimes one guy gets too much credit for the job that the team is doing, and sometimes he gets too much of the blame for what the team is doing. That's regardless of what sport, whether it's football, basketball, baseball. Sometimes, you know, the quarterbacks get too much praise for what they're doing, and then sometimes the quarterback gets too much of the blame because it's not all his fault. Hines has to figure out a way, and he has the remainder of this season to figure it out. Well, at least he has at least, 15 games to try to figure this out, to, you know, and I'm saying 15 to put themselves in a position where they're in a playoff spot and not fighting for one. He has to find out a way to get these guys to play, regardless of what it is. I mean, switching lineups. He has to do something because right now, whatever he's doing or not doing, it's not working. You know, and then eventually, at the end of the season, regardless of, you know, us coming in here and saying, you know, or you saying, Willie, these players need to play better. And you are absolutely right. They need to play better.
They're but capable the of playing yeah, better.
No, they need to play better. They're not. They're capable and they need to play better. But at the end of the season, if this doesn't look like a team that is primed to do good things moving forward, then they can't trade the players because nobody's going to want the guys that we're talking about because True. Of the contracts. What is the next step?
Yeah, I think
the next step is, unfortunately, you look at the head coach.
Yes. So the markers are these three games, as Adam pointed out. Then there's the trade deadline. Then there's the end of the season. And so those are the markers on how things go. Like, to me, the response tomorrow night is huge. I got to see something, and it's got to start with the top players. You got five shots among their top six forwards. I cannot put that on the coach. Not six guys.
Start
They're
demoting
out there.
People, man.
Huh?
Start demoting people. I'm not. Do something that's going to
they have tried.
Rattle
they've
up
benched
the cage,
Matt Duchene.
Man.
They've benched Ryan Johansson. They've benched different guys. They have tried taking ice time away. They've tried different things. They stay up all night thinking about these things. They've tried different line combinations. They're trying to find the right solution. And it has been better. Like, we were talking about a team that was 9-4-2 in the previous 15 games before last night. And last night was a big one, and they fell back. And so back to the drawing board. But they have trended in the right direction slowly, steadily. But it's still nowhere near where they need to be if they want to achieve their goal the way they were built.
Rand Carthon's opening press conference in 30 minutes. What do we want to hear from Rand Carthon today? What questions do we want answered? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Well, you know, he's got all kinds of experience. And to be able to... you know, come from the 49er organization, the success that they've had. He saw that come together. He had a hand in that. His strengths are his communication skills and his work ethic. I'll say this to you guys, all right? Technology has changed this game. Everybody's got a report on a player. You know, there's all kinds of stuff going on. And Rand is one of those guys that's going to watch tape. He's going to watch a player. He has that unique ability to describe a player to you. You shut your eyes and listen to him talk, and you'll know exactly the player at the end of the description. He's got an amazing memory, recall. In this world of player acquisition and draft and free agency and all those things, you need to be able to have a good foundation to draw from. For example, he could be describing player A, for example, and he'll go back and say he's got these kind of traits. He would remind you of maybe just a little shorter of this guy when he played for this team for 10 years and on and on and on. So he works, he communicates, he's behind the scenes. He's not that guy that wants to get credit and give credit, all that kind of stuff.
There you go. That was former Titans head coach Jeff Fisher, who, of course, worked with Rand Carthon with the Rams, both in St. Louis and Los Angeles. We will carry Rand Carthon's introductory press conference in just under 25 minutes. Before we get into that, I kind of want to set it up with our thoughts. about the press conference and what we want to get out of it. And I know for certain there are going to be so many questions that we have, the three of us, and the people who are asking questions at the press conference that probably aren't going to get answered, but they should be asked anyways. And one of those questions being the relationship between Mike Vrabel and Rand Carthon, the relationship between Rand Carthon, Mike Vrabel, Amy Adams Strunk, how that trio of the powers that be is going to go down and his interpretation of all of that. That's, for me, question number one.
And I hope they do have answers to that question. Mm-hmm. I think they should be prepared to answer that question.
They should be.
Now, as far as quarterback and roster moves and things like that, I think that they would have, just having listened to a lot of these press conferences, mm-hmm. they have the ability, Rand Carthon does, to say, look, I just got here, right? I've started to formulate my ideas, but I'm not ready to make those decisions right now. Like, I feel like they could play that card, mm-hmm. which will be disappointing to all of us because we want some fresh things to talk about. Like, we hope that they drop some clues on some of this stuff,
drop
right?
Drop some tea.
Yeah, come on, give us a little something here. But they have every right to say, look, this is my first day on the job. I'm just getting here. I got to move here. We have time to make these decisions. I got some ideas on my head. I want to keep talking to my coaches. I want to talk to the staff that I'm inheriting. What I'm looking for today is what are the philosophical things? Like, what are the practical things? Is he bringing some guys in with him? Is he inheriting some guys? Does he know any of the guys that he's going to be working with? Does he go back with any of those guys?
Have you scouted those guys coming out of college?
Yeah. But just the people he's going to be working with every day, like just being able to sort of get in and hit the ground running, you know, there's going to be a little bit of a growth curve. This is his first time being a GM. He's 41 years old. He's probably going to be working with guys that are a lot older than him, and now he's the boss, right? Even if he's not technically Mike Vrabel's boss, he's pretty much everybody else's boss, right? So you got to form that relationship. So I'm curious what he says about that. As much as I would love to know what he thinks about the quarterback, I really don't expect him to answer that today. I don't think. We'll see.
I don't expect him to answer it.
Yeah.
I expect him to say something along the lines of, you know, it's my first day. I just got here. We're going to get in. We're going to learn the roster. I think he knows exactly what he wants to do at the quarterback position because I'm sure they talked about that in the interviews. Yeah. I think part of the reason why he got this job is because he and Mike Vrabel and Amy Adams Strunk are all aligned about the direction of this football team, which would be, most notably, the quarterback situation. So he knows what they're going to do. He knows what he wants to do at the quarterback position. He knows how he feels about Ryan Tannehill, whether it's stick with Ryan Tannehill, run it back, or move on from Ryan Tannehill. He's just not going to tell you.
Yeah, he's not. It would be great if he did.
It'd be great if he said, you know what? Ryan Tannehill stinks. We're going to go after
Tom Brady.
Get him out of
here. Or Ryan Tannehill is our quarterback, but we're going to go and try to find our future quarterback. I'm sure he's still in the process of evaluating this roster. And, you know, he has to hit the ground running because not only does he have to evaluate this roster, he has to evaluate, you know, potential individuals that you can bring in to upgrade this roster. You know, he was so entrenched at what they were doing in San Francisco up until last week. Now he has to switch gears and be totally immersed in trying to fix the Tennessee Titans because they are broken. Whether we want to say it or not, this team is broken and they need to be rebuilt from the ground up. Not saying that they need to demolish everything, but as we've seen, this bottom half of this roster is not good. And it seems like that was Rand's, one of his fortes is help building a roster from the bottom up. Jeff Fisher even said it in a sense. So I think his first, you know, beside evaluating the whole roster, is to how can I make this roster, because free agency comes before the draft. So how can I make this roster better from the bottom up before we get into the draft?
And coming up next, I want to get into not just what I want to hear about Rand Carthon's vision for the future of the Titans, but what he's learned from the past as well. Plus your phones. What do you want to hear from Rand Carthon today? It's your day. 615-737-1025. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game.
I believe in a situation like this, Rand comes in, and most GMs will come in, take an assessment of what they have in the personnel department. Let's just assume there's 20 scouts in the personnel department. And more than likely, he'll have relationships with, I don't know, half to three quarters one way or another. And those that he doesn't, he will give them more than likely an opportunity to see how they play out during the spring, how they report, what their reports are like, how they articulate their thoughts, and how their evaluating prowess might be before any decisions are made. Most times these general managers don't want to come in and slash and burn. It's just not the way. It used to be that way more so, unless you have an issue. Now, this is a situation with Mike Vrabel being there, and I'm sure he has a really good understanding of that scouting staff, and I'm sure he's going to impart his wisdom and insight to Rand, and they're going to come to some decisions together. Even though Rand will have full say on who he's hiring there, he will tap into the knowledge the head coach has as per how these guys evaluate, how they project, how the pro department is versus the college department. Rand, again, has a really good eye on that, but there's no question he's going to tap in to their head coach to make final decisions on that staff.
There you go. That was Thomas Dimitroff, former Atlanta Falcons general manager who worked with Rand Carthon in Histon as a scout with the Atlanta Falcons, on how he thinks Rand Carthon will approach the Titans general manager position. I have some thoughts on what I would like Rand Carthon to touch on, what questions I'd like to be asked, but it's also your day as well. Questions that you'd like to be asked of Rand Carthon. Let's get to your phones. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Crazy Billy's up next. What's up, Billy?
Hey guys, what have we gotten ourselves into on this Friday? Crazy Billy.
Hey, guys. Appreciate you taking my call. This one's for D. Mace. It's kind of going back in history a little bit. D. Mace, you know, I remember when there was a lot of pressure for you to be a punt returner, and you remember those times, and Mr. Floyd Reese and former Coach Fish was there. How did that go forth, and then you ended up leaving Dang? Was there a lot of interaction with Floyd Reese, and do you think it's the same kind of thing that our new GM's going to do? I'll get off, and thanks. God bless, and go Titans.
Thank you, Crazy Billy. Appreciate it. I don't think there was much conversation, at least from what I understand. Now, you know, there could have been conversations behind closed doors, in regards to not just evaluating me, but other people. Now, you know, listen, they wanted to trade me after my third year, going into my fourth year. And for whatever reason, I don't know who made the decision. I know one of the guys that was fighting for me, Les Steckel. So I don't know who else in that room was standing on tables and fighting for me. I don't know how that interaction went between Floyd and Jeff, but ultimately whoever made the decision to not, you know, try to trade me, because I think San Diego was the destination spot for me at one particular time. That's what the speculations were. So I'm sure Floyd and Jeff had a lot of discussions on the roster and if I fit the roster at that time. But ultimately, you know, the decision was made, and I end up, you know, prolonging my career here in Nashville for another, 4 or 5 years. So you just hope that, you know, when he comes in, if one of those situations comes up where, you know, one guy potentially wants to get rid of another guy, you know, wants to possibly keep him around, that they sort of talk it through, and not just them two, but all of the coaches, and then make a decision that is best for the team, not necessarily best for one person.
Yeah, we did have somebody text, and we had several texts actually yesterday talking about the players' reaction to either John Robinson getting fired or Rand Carthon coming in. I do think that's an interesting question, because how much really is there crossover between the general manager and the roster?
In regards to,
like, players that are currently on the roster, not players that you would acquire, obviously, the general manager.
Well, I mean, it just depends, because, I mean, this league is a fraternity, and it's just a revolving door. One coach leaves and go to another team, and it's not like new blood is coming in every time, even though you do get that. But a majority of these guys are just going from team to team, and then their title changes. So I'm sure, you know, Rand has scouted some of these people some of these players that the Titans have on their team. I'm sure he has scouted them coming out of college, so he knows them very well. I'm sure he scouted them, you know, during the offseason, potential free agents you could bring in. So that's always – it's always good that you know, your new GM or your new head coach are familiar with at least, you know, a portion of your roster, so he can come in and, okay, I've evaluated these guys before. I understand. I know what I'm looking for. Then the other half is, okay, these are new guys I've never seen in my life. Now I get to evaluate them and see if they fit what we want to do moving forward.
And another thing that I want to hear from Brent Carthon's press conference, because all of the questions about philosophy moving forward and what he's doing with the Titans, those are all very important questions that should be asked and questions that I'd like to be answered. Other questions that I have, though, are more so looking back with the 49ers, both on a philosophical level and like a player personnel level. Because the one thing we've been talking about all week, ever since Rand Carthon got hired, was, you know, how much involvement did he have with trading for Christian McCaffrey, drafting Trey Lance, some of the player acquisition. The answer all week long has been, we're not going to know. We don't know that. We don't know how much involvement we had. So that's what I would like to know and be at least be asked, because he's not going to tell you, oh, yeah, it was all me who decided to trade for Christian McCaffrey. But it would be interesting to know his involvement with player personnel and acquisition in San Francisco, and also the philosophy in San Francisco, things that he admired about the organization, about some of the coaches, the way that Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch worked together, things that he admired that he would like to implement in Tennessee. Because I think San Francisco is a very well-run organization.
I think that's a great point. When you come from a successful system, what do you take with you from that system? And you have a chance to put your own stamp on some things, right? And you have to work with an established coach, right? It's not like he's coming with another coach from that family tree, right? He's coming into a new family. And Mike Vrabel's family has been pretty successful up until the last 2 months, right? I mean, he's done some good things. So I think that's a great question. And I think when you're coming up through the ranks, you're probably sitting there every time the 49ers, and probably going back when he was with the Rams and with the Falcons, where Rand Carthon was probably sitting there going, okay, if I were the GM, what would I have done there? Hey, I just learned something right there. I'm going to remember this next time this comes up right here, all those experiences.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not just San Francisco with him, I believe. It's every place that he's been
right.
to, they've had some success. You know, but people just look at San Francisco and say, well, you know, because of the consistency that they've had within the last, you know, what it's been since 2014 when they went to the Super Bowl. I think it was 2014 they went to the Super Bowl.
They went in 19, too.
19, so you got two Super Bowl appearances, but a team that has consistently, even though they had to, you know, let guys go, they've been able to replace those guys and keep moving. And that's not just in San Fran, St. Louis / L.A., he was there. Atlanta, when it was on their run, he was there. So he's been at winning organizations. He's been a part of winning organizations everywhere that he's been. Now, Atlanta, are they winning now? Not as much as they want to, but when he was there, they were winning. St. Louis / L.A., L.A. is still winning. They had a bad season this year, but they believe they can, you know, sort of make do and be better next year.
And I do think with the St. Louis / L.A., you probably learned a lot while they struggled. Like they had some struggles in there. Like it took a while to get to where L.A. was the last couple years.
They got their quarterback. They went and got their quarterback
right.
in golf.
But
and they got
so
better.
He was there. Those Jeff Fisher years, you know, they weren't very good.
Oh, they were so bad.
Yeah.
They were so bad. But I think there's valuable lessons that can be learned. Because with San Francisco, when he first got to San Francisco, it was, you know, 2017, 18. Those years, San Francisco wasn't very good.
Yeah.
16, 17. And that 17 was the year that they traded for Jimmy Garoppolo. They turned things around. They were in the Super Bowl in 2019. So those are all things that you can take away, even from a struggling organization, how good organizations – or struggling team, rather, how good organizations are able to turn things around.
Yeah, and you weather the storms. You have some bad breaks. You have some injuries. So there's something to be said for building, right, and being able to – go with the flow when things don't go your way. You know, if everything had gone well, then I'd almost be worried, right? Because at some point, you're going to go through some storms.
Coming up next, we are right to Rand Carthon's introductory press conference. We will hear from the Titans' new general manager for the first time. All of that coming up next on Caroline Willie D. Mace.